As Justin mentioned, this is the first Sabbath of 2018. This time of the year, as all of us know, newspapers, magazines, news networks, TV and radio stations are all talking about what happened in 2017. And, you know, they're picking their top 10 stories or their top 5 bad stories or good stories. You know, man of the year, woman of the year is being selected by Time magazine. In this case, this year, it was women of the year. High points and low points are being recorded. It's this time of the year, people talk about New Year's resolutions and, you know, new beginnings. We, of course, understand it's the Roman calendar, and we don't especially celebrate New Year's because it's so closely associated with the old ancient festivals of the Saturnalia and the bringing on the sun again after the shortest day of the year and looking forward to the spring. But I thought it might be good to take a pause and take a look at a few of the prophetic trends that we have seen in 2017. That will likely further develop in 2018. And I gave Brent my title, which is What's Ahead for 2018? And I'd like to talk about a few things. There's many things we could talk about, but I'd like to emphasize 4 points today in my sermon on prophecy. What's ahead for 2018? What are the trends that will further develop this year? What can we look for around the corner? I'd like to begin by going to Matthew 24. Matthew 24, because all of us and people generally have always been interested in what is going to happen in the future. What's ahead for the future? And this was the question Christ's disciples asked him on the Mount of Olives just prior to his crucifixion. And as he gathered them around him, he began to go through a litany of things that they should look for that would be happening in the future. And frankly, as we will read, things haven't changed a whole lot in many areas. They've just gotten more complicated. Let's pick up Christ's answer to their question in Matthew 24, verse 6. And this is the first thing I think we should be looking at. Christ said, "And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars." Do we hear of wars and rumors of war? Well, yeah, I think we heard about that from Bob. He referenced that. We hear about that almost on a daily basis these days with the conflict in North Korea, the nuclear tests that have gone on there, the 20 missiles they fired off, test firing them this year to see how far they can go. And I think we know that wars have become far more complicated. Let's go back for a minute in time to the first century and put ourselves maybe sitting on those stones listening to Christ talk. Was this relevant to his disciples? What was happening in the first century in the Roman world, in Judea? Well, the Romans were conquering the world, right? The Romans were known, you know, for their soldiers and their armies. And in the north, they were conquering Britannia, which we know as Britain. So the Roman Empire had gone that far north, and they were imperialistically conquering these nations. To the east, they were going all the way to India. To the west, they'd gone to the Rock of Gibraltar. In North Africa, they'd gone all the way across North Africa. I mean, the warring machine of the Roman army is renowned. And they had conquered the world, and they remained in charge, basically, of the known world for the next 1,000 years, when you think about how long the Romans controlled the world. So, do you think Christ's words were relevant to his disciples? Well, yeah. All they had to do is turn around and look at the Temple Mount We talk about what was on the Temple Mount in the first century. We know the temple was there. We know Christ went into the temple on that platform. But what else was there? You students of history, what else was right next to the temple? With the tower built out of the top of it that overlooked the temple. It was called the Fortress of Antonia. It was the Roman garrison, a big fort that had been built just to the north of the platform of the temple. And this was where a whole garrison of Roman soldiers were living. And this tower housed a 24-hour guard who stood watch and looked at the temple at all times. You know why he was there? Because there had been so many Jewish revolts that Herod said, I'm going to rebuild the temple for the Jews, and then I'm going to build the Roman garrison right next door. So they can keep an eye on these Jews because they have a rebellious streak. You know, there had been the Maccabean Wars, the rebellion of the Maccabees. There had been rebellions in Christ's early life that had happened. We've all heard about Masada, you know, the rebellion that occurred there. I mean, these Jews, they were pretty rebellious. They were always trying to break off the Roman yoke. And, of course, what did that do? That drew armies around Jerusalem to surround the city again. So it was relevant to their day, and it is relevant to our day. And, frankly, it has been relevant, these statements of Christ, since this day. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled. How many people built bomb shelters following the Bay of Pigs crisis in 1962? I remember in Canada, I visited a couple of people, and we were walking around looking at this man's orchard, and there was a big bulge in the ground, and I said, "What's that?" And he goes, "That's the bomb shelter we built during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we thought there was going to be nuclear war." Of course, I remember being a young student at an elementary school, and we had drills. Remember that? Nuclear attack. The alarm will sound, and you should get under your desk. And we laugh now because we know that would have been totally futile, wouldn't it? Might help you in an earthquake. You'll climb under your desk or in a wall, but totally futile. But there were a lot of people who were deeply troubled by the threat of nuclear war, which there are today. There are a number of people. Of course, a lot of people, like I said, they have in their backyards, or most of them probably been taken out now because they realized they were useless. They all had little air vents, so you could breathe down air underground, which could not have filtered out the nuclear cloud that would have followed. Anyway, a lot of people were troubled, but Christ said to his disciples, that's us, see that you are not troubled, because we know that we have this hope that prevents us from doubting, as Bob talked about in his sermonette. See that you're not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. The end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. And oftentimes we see this played out in the United Nations, you know, in our news, where one nation comes to the Security Council and says, this nation over here is abusing its people. Right now it's Iran. And we need to somehow penalize those people or call them out. And then, of course, recently the United States was called out in the United Nations, criticized for our president's comments about moving, our embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Again, you know about the news, but this causes a constant foment to occur in the world. And what does it do? It causes instability, does it not? Instability. And, of course, if we didn't have the hope that lies within us and the confidence that God's going to work everything out properly and right, we might be troubled. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. And all of these are the beginning of sorrows. We read down in verse 24, Matthew Matthew 24, verse 37. Let's drop down to verse 37. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. What was it about the days of Noah that we have in common? Because we believe we are living in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. If you go back and read the account in Genesis 6, 7, and 8, I think we'd all agree when you read the account that the reason that God decided to destroy the majority of the population of earth at that time was because of violence. And the value of life had dropped so low. Think of our American culture. Do we live in a violent culture? How many people die from firearm gunfire these days in America? Well, I think we all know that with freedoms come side effects. We have the highest death rate of any country in the world from gunshot wounds. And, of course, you get, I think I can safely say, deranged people, you know, who climb up in a hotel room and open fire on a concert audience like we had in Las Vegas this past year and kill 58 people and wound 400 other people, some of whom are still in the hospital. Violent acts, you know, people walking into schools and trying to shoot and kill people. I remember the days I used to go to my son's high school in Wellesley, Massachusetts, where they went to junior high and high school. And the doors were always open, and I could just walk freely in the hallways of that high school and, you know, go visit my kids' teachers and the principal that I talked to on occasion, especially when it was time to get off for the Feast of Tabernacles. I always had to go down and explain to the principal each year why we kept these days and why I was taking our children out of school for 10 days. And, you know, I could come and go. When my children started playing volleyball, competitive volleyball, I decided to get referee certification so I could go to their games. And so I would go in and I would referee the JV games, and then they would play the varsity games and I'd get to watch. And I could roam the high school freely, you know, as a parent, as a referee. Can't do that today. You go to a public high school today and you've got to walk through a metal detector. You've got to get buzzed in because the doors are locked. Our world has changed because of violence, hasn't it? The value of life seems to have dropped. Notice verse 38, for as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. He's not talking about anything being wrong with eating and drinking or marrying. It's a matter that everyday activities continue to go on and people just don't seem to notice anymore. We get inured, we get hardened to these things that go on in society. We hear about a shooting in Las Vegas and we go, ooh, that's terrible. I'm glad I wasn't there. And then we move on in our lives and seem to forget that these things are building. They're trends that will not end but continue in our culture. Verse 39, they didn't know until the flood came and took them all away. And also will the coming of the Son of Man be. People will be surprised by the return of Jesus Christ and not expect it. And they'll say, well, why? Not realizing how bad our culture really is. So my first point is that we should watch for wars and rumors of wars. They will continue. They will probably intensify before things get better, frankly, the way things have been going the last year. And violence, violent acts of terror will continue. I think as Christians who understand these things, we have to be careful not to find ourselves, if we can prevent it, in areas where we would be part of the soft targets. Keep that in mind. You know, don't be foolish. Just like if you go to a big city, you know, you don't want to walk down a dark alley by yourself. You know, we want to make sure that we use our hearts and our minds and exercise wisdom. But in some cases, you know, when you climb onto an airplane to go from point A to point B, which many of us will do this next year, as somebody told me one time, you need to be prayed up, right? Because you can't say, well, I'm not going to fly anymore for the danger of somebody blowing up an airplane. Or I can't go into a government building because that may be a target. Or I can't go to a sports venue or a concert because that could be a soft target. But we got to be careful and be aware that those things are going to not diminish, but to rise. So what can we expect in 2018 in this area of wars, rumors of wars and violence? More of the same and probably worse, I think is a good guess based on what Christ said. The second area that I'd like to point out, and I think this has become pretty clear to most of us who've been around the church for a while, and that is keep our eyes on Jerusalem. Keep our eyes on the Middle East. Notice here in Matthew 24, verse 15. Christ said, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. This is a little like the story of the wars and rumors of wars, because Jerusalem has been decimated. You know how many times that city has been destroyed? 48 times in history. If I was seeking out a place to live, it would not be Jerusalem. Right? It's like buying a house on the coast. If you had the money, would you buy a house, you know, on the sand cliffs of San Diego? Beautiful views. But you know, those cliffs are eroding at 6 inches a year. So would you buy a house right on the edge of the cliff? You might have a view for 3 or 4 years, but eventually your house is going to fall into the sea, right? Jerusalem has been one of the most violent cities in the world historically. A lot of people talk to me over the years of being in the church, especially when I was working with the education programs, and I go out and I do slide presentations on Jerusalem, past, present, and future. I gave an abbreviated presentation to all of you when the first year I was here. Anyway, they'll come up to me afterwards and say, oh, you went to the Holy Land. And I try to be very gentle with people because for some people that's like the Hajj. That's like, you know, the trip to Mecca. That's like the greatest pilgrimage. If I could just go to Jerusalem, if I could just go to the Holy Land. And I try to explain to them, well, it is an interesting place to visit. But as I said, you certainly wouldn't want to live there, number one. And number two, there's really very little that's holy about the place. The city of Jerusalem, how many of you have been there? A few of you? Just like any other old city. Just like Amman, Jordan. It's just like Istanbul. You know, you go downtown, it's got old streets, and frankly, it smells like urine. These old towns, old cities, they all smell the same. They all seem the same. They're just really old. Now, I like history, so to me, they're interesting. But to people who don't care about history, they're probably not very entertaining. Jerusalem's like that. It's an old city that's been rebuilt, as I said, at least 48 times. A lot of people think of Israel as the Holy Land. I think I've mentioned before that Linda and I traveled to the Middle East 1 year to be with the volunteers who wanted to tour northern Israel. And we flew into Tel Aviv and we spent the night at a hotel because we had points. And we stayed there at the Marriott. I think it was the Renaissance or one of the Marriott upscale hotels, and we were jet lagged, so we got up at 4 o'clock in the morning because we couldn't sleep anymore, and we decided to go out and walk on the boardwalk on the Mediterranean before daylight. And it was really quite nice to walk along the boardwalk. And then after a while, we noticed, hey, it's 4 o'clock in the morning and all these bars are still open. And we walked a little further on the boardwalk and we saw these cards on the boardwalk, and we'd pick them up, and they were advertisements like you might see in Las Vegas for prostitution houses. We go, oh, look at this. And then another block down the road, we saw beautiful Russian women prostitutes at 4 a.m. still doing business. And we asked the concierge, what are all these bars doing open? He says, oh, those are all the gay bars that are open all night here in Tel Aviv. He says, all of the gays from the Muslim countries, where it's highly condemned, they find a way to travel to Israel, and this is where they come to meet Jewish gay people and other gay people from other Muslim countries. And they have a saying in Israel, go to Jerusalem to pray, you go to Tel Aviv to play. It's like Sin City. It's almost like Vegas in Tel Aviv. That's just the reality of what it's like. And I try to explain that to people. You know, I try not to offend them, but I say, look, it is not the Holy Land anymore. It's just like any other big corrupted city in the world. Like I said, Tel Aviv is more like Las Vegas than it is the kingdom of God. And Jerusalem, of course, we know it has its divisive problems. And I don't know, it's really kind of a unique city in the world, an interesting place to visit. But like I said, you certainly wouldn't want to live there. But let's go back to this prophecy that Christ said. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place. Again, it's my history coming in. But you know what happened after the Romans destroyed the temple in 70 A.D.? Over the next 50 years, you know what the Romans built on that platform where the temple used to be? They built a temple to Jupiter, the king of the gods of the Romans. And they erected a statue of Jupiter inside that temple. Now, if you were a Roman living in the second century when that occurred, and you read this scripture, what would you think? That's it! That's the abomination that makes desolate. They have desolated our sanctuary, and what could be more abominable than putting up that statue on the place where the Holy of Holies was? And that happened more than once, right? We know that in the 6th century, after that temple had crumbled, the Muslims took over and built the Dome of the Rock, right? And a century later, the Al-Aqsa Mosque was put on that mountain. One of the biggest mosques in the world. It holds over 5,000 people. Get the idea. Again, to a Jew, what could be more desolate? It's interesting. I took a picture of a sign at the bottom of the Temple Mount that goes up to one of those entrances into the Temple Mount. And it says, all Jews are forbidden to go on top of this mountain. So Jews in Israel today, even though us as tourists, sometimes we get to go up there if the Palestinians will let us, because it's controlled by Muslim Palestinians, the top of the mount is, or the top of the platform. We can occasionally go up and visit, but Jews are not permitted to go up there because it's considered to be an abomination to them. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Let's go to Daniel 11. Daniel 11. Let's talk about this abomination of desolation that we believe will happen again just before Christ returns. Daniel 11, verse 31. Since we've got to have eyes on Jerusalem, It says, and forces shall be mustered by him. And this prophecy in Daniel 11 is talking about the king of the north that we believe will be a resurrection of the Roman Empire again. And the beast who's talked about in Revelation is synonymous with this king of the north. Forces will be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. In Luke 21:20, it says, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know its destruction is near. So it's prophesied this king of the north will muster forces and they will defile once again the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation. Again, I might add, because things have been placed there that have desolated the holy mountain many, many times. In order to take away the daily sacrifice, what do you have to have? Daily sacrifices, right? So we believe that something will occur in the Middle East, in Jerusalem in particular, that will bring about the return of the daily sacrifices by a small group of Jews. Let's go to Daniel 8, verse 9. I'm not going to read these prophecies in total. Daniel 11 is the longest prophecy in the Bible. Daniel 8 is a precursor to that. Let's read from Daniel 8, verse 9. Daniel 8, verse 9. And out of one of these resurrections of the Roman Empire shall come a little horn, synonymous with the king of the north and the beast of Revelation, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, toward the glorious land. So there will be an expansion of the empire of this little horn. And it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. So this coming power that we've always said will be another resurrection of the Roman Empire, so out of Europe, very most likely, will persecute the church. Verse 11, he even exalts himself as high as the prince of the host. He exalts himself as though he were Christ. And by him the daily sacrifices were taken away. And the place of his sanctuary was cast down. So once again, this is giving us a time frame of the abomination of desolation that Christ talked about in Matthew 24. You know, I've often thought about this, maybe you have too. What would it take for the evening and the morning sacrifice to be brought back? What would it take? I just described to you how secular Israel has become in most parts. It would take something pretty dramatic. There has been some talk, and even after the announcement by our president about moving our embassy to Jerusalem, the Pope has declared that Jerusalem should be a town, a city for all faiths. Now, how could that happen? All three monotheistic religions in the world claim Jerusalem as a principal city in their theology. Christians, Muslims, right? And Jews. So how can you work it out so that all of them can share the mountain? That's the holy place, not the city of Jerusalem. It's that platform. How could they all do it? Well, there have been some proposals that have been put forward. I've read them in articles where the Jews could actually begin sacrificing on the Temple Mount without destroying the buildings that are there if they found something that let them know that the Holy of Holies was originally in a location on the Temple Mount that wasn't under the Dome of the Rock or the Aska Mosque, where they could actually build an altar. We know by reading in Ezra and Nehemiah when they were released, you know, by the Persians to go back to Jerusalem and to rebuild the city, they started with an altar. They built part of the wall. Remember, they discovered the law And they said, we need to start sacrificing again. They discovered something in the earth, and it spawned this religious revival among at least 86,000 of them, and they started sacrificing again. All they needed was an altar. Not a temple, just an altar to start sacrificing. Again, I've speculated, what would it take? What would the Israelis, what would the Jews have to find that would cause a religious revival in Israel? You know, those hills, those limestone hills on which the Temple Mount is built, is a labyrinth of tunnels and passageways. What if they discovered the Ark of the Covenant under there? Think that might do it? I mean, this is just sheer speculation. There are any number of things that could happen that would cause a religious revival around Jerusalem that would cause the Jews to reinstitute evening and morning sacrifices. But in order to take them away, they have to start up first, right? And they have to go on for, we believe, 3.5 years. And then they're taken away. So we need to keep our eyes on this part of the world to see what might develop. So what can we look for around Jerusalem in 2018? Well, tensions will increase between Palestinians and Israelis. Eventually, someone, perhaps like the Pope, would have to come in and be a peacemaker and to come up with a compromising plan on how all three of the monotheistic religions could use that mountain together, peaceably. Could happen. We need to look for the possibility of military presence to maintain the balance of power. Again, armies surrounding Jerusalem. As I said, something that might create a religious revival among the Jews and bring about the return of the evening and the morning sacrifices to resume in Jerusalem. Let's read here in Daniel 8 and verse 12 to introduce my third point. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices. And he cast truth down to the ground. So this individual will be opposed to the truth of God, will persecute, as we read in verse 10, the true church and people of God. Notice the latter part of verse 12, though. He did all this and prospered. My third point is we really need to watch the world economies. The world economies. How can a great economy flourish? Now, we might say, well, look at the stock market. Look at what's happening in China and Europe. I mean, unemployment rates have dropped to their lowest in 25 years in Europe. We might say, well, wow, the economies of the world look pretty healthy right now. Well, brethren, most of you probably know it's just a confidence game. It's smoke and mirrors. I remember years ago when I took a drive-through car from college in Texas to New York City. Actually, it was Boston. We drove through New York. We stopped at a place called Fort Knox, Tennessee. We visited Fort Knox. Could look from a distance at the vaults where we held gold. And everybody carried in their wallets paper money that said, this is a gold certificate. You know, the American dollar is no longer a gold certificate. You look on your dollar bill today, and it will not say it's a gold certificate. Will it? It's a confidence game. And, of course, our government has presses that print those dollar bills by the billions. In fact, our debt is growing at an enormous rate. And, of course, the politicians want to be reelected, so they say we will continue to spend on all these worthwhile projects, right? We need new bridges. You know, we need new airports. We need this. We need that. We need more infrastructure. We need more Medicare. We need more Medi-Cal, you know, you think of it, that's money they're spending, right? They're lowering our taxes, right? That just means we're going to go deeper into debt. Currently, I think all of us know the American debt is, what, over trillion dollars now? 21 or 22 it's approaching? The last figure that I saw said that every man, woman, and child in the United States of America today, if we were to take on that debt, would owe over $60,000 each. That's how big the debt is. And it's a confidence game. Those people who are driving up the stock market right now just have confidence that our economy is going to do well, so they're gambling on that confidence, right? How many of you have heard of Bitcoin? Almost everybody here. Bitcoin was introduced 10 years ago. And what is Bitcoin? It's an internet. It's not even paper. It's just internet confidence. And if you would have invested $100 in Bitcoin 10 years ago, on the internet, you'd be worth over $1 million right now. Because Bitcoin has skyrocketed on the open commodities market. But it's dangerous because it's just confidence. It's just people having confidence in this denomination. Now, Merrill Lynch recently announced, I saw this on the news a couple of days ago, that they're not allowing any of their 17,000 financial advisors to invest in or recommend anybody invest in Bitcoin. Because it went up so fast. Guess what happens to things that go up fast? They go down pretty fast. Because it's based on nothing more than confidence. There's nothing really substantial like Fort Knox used to be for the dollar to support the dollar bill. Or to certainly support Bitcoin. An economy of the future, as it talks about here, could be a confidence game, couldn't it? Certainly could. Let's go to Revelation 18. I'd like to read a few scriptures in Revelation to maybe get a little insight. Revelation 18 and verse 3. This is a chapter that talks about this beast power. I'd like to just read a few highlights. Revelation 18, 3. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of the fornication of the kings of the earth who have committed fornication with her. This means economic interaction. And the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. So we believe there will be an economy that will rise out of Europe under the direction perhaps of this king of the north, this little horn, this beast that we've read about earlier. Drop down to verse 9. The kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived luxuriously with her will weep and lament for her. Because eventually that'll all come crumbling down just before Christ returns. When they see the smoke of her burning, standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, "Alas, alas, the great city Babylon." This soul system is compared to the ancient Babylon that fell. "That mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come. And the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore." A great economy will come out of Europe. We should look for that. It will eventually fall, and it will be based on confidence. Let's drop down to verse 17. "For in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing. Every shipmaster who will travel by ship, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance, and they cried out when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, 'What is like this great city?' They threw dust on their heads and cried out, weeping and wailing, and saying, 'Alas, alas, that great city in which all who had ships on the sea and became rich by her wealth, for in 1 hour she is made completely desolate.'" Completely desolate. Go to Revelation 13 and verse 16. Revelation 13, verse 16. Talking about this same power that becomes a great economic influence on the earth. Verse 16 of Revelation 13. "He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and on their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except one has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name." People have speculated over the years, you know, what is this talking about? A tattoo? You know, in your hand? A chip embedded in your forehead? What could this be? Well, technology brings up even all kinds of speculation, right? But it exists today. I don't know if you knew this. Most of you do. You know, I've got a smartphone here. And now, of course, if you tie your bank account to your smartphone, you can just go right into Starbucks. I see a lot of people doing this. And, you know, you hold your phone in front of a little reader and boop, boop, automatically deducts the money from your bank account, right? Could that be how the economy of the world will operate in the future? Cashless societies we talk about. No more credit cards, just your smartphone held up to a smartphone reader. Buy and sell. I had an interesting conversation, you know, this talks about foreheads. Had an interesting conversation with my nephew. My nephew just got a new job. Actually, my son, who is an engineer for General Atomics in San Diego, my son helps design the Predator, you know, the unmanned plane that flies over Iraq and Afghanistan, even as we're sitting here. He's been working for that company for 22 years, and he recently got my nephew, my sister's son, a job. Now, my sister's son is very smart. He was the youngest PhD out of the University of Arkansas that they've ever graduated at age 28. And he got his degree in nanotechnology. And General Atomics just hired him down in San Diego. And he spent a couple of weeks out in the desert. And so when we were down there over Thanksgiving, I was talking to him. He was at the family gathering. And I said, what were you doing out there? And he says, well, just experimenting. And I pressed him a little more, you know, what kind of tests are you doing? And he says, well, we are developing a small drone that fits in the fuselage of the Predator, which flies about 75, 80,000 feet. So it can't even, it's got a wingspan of 35 feet, so it can't even be seen by the naked eye by most people. That's why it's a good spy plane, right? And it's unmanned, so you're not risking a pilot. He says, we're working on putting a small drone inside of that fuselage so that the little doors can open and the small drone can drop down to about, he says, 5 kilometers from the surface of the earth. And he says, I am developing through nanotechnology a camera that will be able to take a picture of a face of a person. And with our files, we'll be able to match that face to a person. He says, so this little drone will go down, take a picture of a suspect, like maybe the leader of Al-Qaeda, you know, bringing it to modern terms. And then that drone will send a message back to the big drone, and the big drone will fire a missile, that target, because they can recognize the person from 5 kilometers with a camera. Now you might say, well, that's pretty remarkable technology. You know, I'm going, wow. And he goes, well, you know, it already exists. He says, when you go in the airport and you go through the checkpoints, he says, they've got cameras there. They take your picture. He says, have you been to an airport recently? I said, yeah. He says, they've got your picture. He says, have you been on Facebook? Has anybody ever said, oh, that's Dave Register? And they put a name, you know, by your picture? Picture identification? Take a shot of your face, your forehead. They can immediately identify who you are. And now, like I said, my nephew is working on this technology that can identify it from 5 kilometers. So if you're out in your backyard and you think, I'm perfectly safe, you know. I moved to Utah to get away from the big city. Here I am. I'm perfectly safe. I'm raking leaves in my backyard in Utah. And a little drone comes down and takes your picture. You are identified. So to identify people through technology and to bank through technology that somebody else can control is existing today. It exists. Now, is that what the mark of the beast will be? I'm only speculating. But I think it's kind of interesting to know that the technology exists today, doesn't it? So what should we look for in 2018? Like I said, point number 3 is Look at the economies of the world. Look at how they develop. Watch the economies of the world. We tend sometimes just watch our own economy, but there's more to look at than that. So what should we look for in 2018? Look at the economies of the world. Look to Europe, how its economy will grow, and look to the new economy that is developing. Let's go to Matthew 24 again. Matthew 24 and verse 42. Matthew 24, verse 42. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. You know, I talked about us watching wars, rumors of wars and violence. Talked about watching, keeping our eyes on Jerusalem. Talk about watching the economies of the world. But the most important point, and my final point, the fourth point, is we need to prepare ourselves spiritually. We need to prepare ourselves spiritually. This word in verse 42 of Matthew 24, watch, means to be spiritually on guard. Remember earlier I said when you get on an airplane, what's the most important thing you can do? It's be prayed up. Ask for God's protection and blessing. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that he does not expect. We know what the spiritual disciplines are, aren't we? We know that it's sometimes difficult to pray, to take time to study the Bible, to really meditate. There are so many distractions today. It's hard to meditate, isn't it? You sit down for a moment, we want to be amused by the television, or we want to be entertained by the smartphone or the internet or Facebook. You know, we're so busy. The beginning of the year might be a good time for us to kind of take stock and say, you know, I want to really focus on meditation this year. Or I want to bear down and make sure that I pray more. That's going to be my New Year's resolution, if you need those type of things. We know we need to be reminded of these important things. Studying God's Word more. Praying more. Meditating more, fasting more often. Finding ourselves in spiritual fellowship more often. Be ready, it says in verse 44, a repetition of verse 42. Verse 45, who then is that faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Producing spiritual fruit. That's what that's talking about. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all of his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, in verse 48, my master is delaying his coming. You know, the world's just going on the way it always has. Saying the same things those people said just before the flood came and took them all away. During the time of Noah, we read that earlier in this chapter. That often is the attitude. You know, I think it's interesting that Pew did a research of people attending church in America. It's kind of interesting. When they did their phone research, they were told by 36% of Americans that they attend church regularly. You might say, wow, that's pretty good, 36%. Then they asked the pastors. You know, when people are called by a polling company, they want to look good, right? Church, yeah, I go to church all the time. They asked the pastors, what was the reality? Americans attend church about 17% of the time. over half of what was reported in the Pew research. I think one of the big issues that we face today in God's church is it becomes more and more a challenge to be at church every week. Of course, here I am preaching to the choir. I mean, you guys made your way out of bed early in the morning to come to church. So I know I'm preaching to the choir, but it's important. I remember in San Diego, there was a member there who told me, he says, my goal is to have a perfect attendance at church this year. And he was. And at the end of that year, we gave him a plaque because he was there every week. He came to every Bible study and every service. I think that's important. Hebrews 10, verse 24 and 25. Let's turn over there. Hebrews 10, verses 24 and 25. Let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. You know, when I come into Lodi and I see people sitting around the table and we're talking about what happened this week and that week, and I hear people sharing their concerns and in many cases asking for prayers, getting to know one another, sharing each other's burdens. I mean, that's a form of love, isn't it? Building relationships. We build relationships around tables like that. We build relationships at socials. We build relationships in each other's living rooms. Consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, which is the trend in America. 17% is down from 22% 10 years ago. In Europe, it's 7%. The trend is going the wrong way, according to Scripture. And we in God's church need to buck that, right? Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. The events we've seen in 2017 are going to just intensify in 18, and we see the day approaching much more rapidly than in the past. Finally, let's go to James chapter 4. James 4 and verse 5. James 4 and verse 5. Do you think the Scripture says in vain, the Spirit that dwells in you yearns jealously? God's Spirit yearns for us to grow spiritually and to produce spiritual fruit. The word here is even jealous. God's Spirit is jealous for our attention, our time. James 4, now in verse 6. But he gives more grace, therefore he says, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, submit to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. How do we survive in this world that's going to deteriorate in these areas I've just described? There could have been many areas I would have picked. I picked three. And then emphasize the most important, that is this fourth, prepare ourselves spiritually. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. We can't have one foot in this culture and one foot in the church. We have to be all in, as they say, as God's children, his disciples. Brethren, the year ahead will no doubt be an interesting one, and it will be filled with wars and rumors of wars. It will be filled with violence, probably more than we saw this past year. The year ahead will be questionable economically. The year ahead will bring interesting news out of Jerusalem. Let's keep our eyes on that. But most importantly, brethren, let's prepare ourselves spiritually for 2018. That's the most important thing we can watch for, as Christ told us. Let's be prepared spiritually for the year to come.